Okay, we're back. And today I have a very special guest that I am so excited to share with you. A lady named Myrtle Potter. And she is what we call the trusted voice in healthcare. Let me explain. Basically, Myrtle is a woman who ran a $4 billion company, Bristol Myers & Squibb. She also ran Genentech, which is the most successful biotech company in the world. This woman is incredible. She knows the healthcare system inside and out. But one day, something happened to our friend Myrtle that changed the course of her life. So, in fact, I'm going to let Myrtle share that story with you and give you a little background on why she's doing what she's doing today, who she is, and how she can help you. Myrtle, are you there?
Yes, I am, Jillian.
Hi, buddy. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you very much.
So, when we first met, we met because Myrtle is on the board of directors at a company I work with called Everyday Health. And when we sat down and she told me what she's doing and her story, I was blown away and begged her to come on the show and talk with my callers and take their questions. So, Myrtle, will you retell the story, please, about how you had this massive shift in your career to wanting to help people navigate the healthcare system?
Yes. So about 5 years ago, I had a very serious horseback riding accident, and after a couple of surgeries, I was given a medication to stop the formation of scar tissue in my shoulder. Well, without knowing it, Jillian, I ended up being deathly allergic to this medication. I ended up with failing liver, failing lungs, and total kidney failure. And in fact, I literally almost died. And when I came out of my situation, I just sat back and asked one simple question, and that is, how in the world did that happen to me? And I also asked, what could I have done along the way that would have made a difference in the outcome for my care? And based on all of that, Jillian, I decided, and of course after talking to lots of people and sharing my story, that I probably had something that I could give to others in terms of helping them get through the system so that no one had a situation happen to them like what happened to me.
I think that so many people feel so overwhelmed by the healthcare system, even understanding your insurance. It's like HMO, PPO. It is so incredibly overwhelming. And to hear that someone like yourself who knew the business inside and out, who had all the resources. When you told me the story of how you're in the hospital and you have two kids, you're a single mom, and the doctor walked in and told you to get your affairs in order because you were going to die, that was shocking to me. Shocking. And so the fact that you came back from that, got your health together, and have now completely dedicated your life to helping people in these kinds of situations is completely, utterly and totally inspiring. And you have a segment that you talked to me about that I wanted to do today, and it's the five prescriptions your doctor won't give you, that you won't find in your doctor's bag. Can you tell me about that? Can you start me out with prescription number one?
Sure. Prescription number one is really simple, Jillian. It's getting the best doctor, not the nicest doctor. More often than not, when I speak to people looking for physicians, they focus a lot on how nice someone is to them.
That's so true.
And my number one message is that the nicest person isn't necessarily the best person. Never sacrifice nice for the best.
How do you find the best doctor? What is the best way to go about figuring that out?
I think it's very important to, number one, understand where someone received their education, their medical school training, and I even ask about their undergraduate work. You want to make sure someone has gone to a reputable school. I also like to fundamentally determine whether or not someone, in fact, is board certified. Being board certified is really important. It means that every single year, your doctor has to go through a series of exams and tests that basically say, if he or she passes them, that he or she is qualified to practice medicine in their desired field.
Are you telling me that someone cannot be board certified and practice medicine?
In this country, you would be surprised at the number of physicians who don't have their board certification, but who will still hang up a shingle and claim that they're practicing physicians. It's also really important to make sure that your physician doesn't have, you know, questionable history, that they haven't been involved in criminal investigations or other types of investigations.
Where could you find that information?
You can oftentimes find that information online and also at your state accreditation board. The state medical boards in most states in this country have information around your physician standing.
I love that while I'm interviewing you, I'm taking notes. I just realized that. I was like, wait a minute. I'm supposed to be doing the segment. What am I doing? I'm sitting here. I'm like, board certification, standardized medical board. Okay, I'm sorry. Thank you. All right. Prescription number two.
Prescription number two really speaks to the value of seeking out help from a university hospital if your situation gets complex enough. Our local community hospitals are really great and can solve very complex problems. However, there are a couple of instances when I will go to a university hospital. Number one, if I happen to have been diagnosed with a rare disease, or number two, if I've been diagnosed for a disease that I'm receiving treatment for, but for which I'm not getting better. If you have been treated for something over and over again and you're not seeing progress, then in that situation, I would always go to a university. And the reason why going to a university is so valuable is because universities see more difficult cases more often than not.
Okay.
And the more times a physician expert actually sees a particular disease, the better they get at treating it. And in addition, university settings have so many resources available to them, and they're usually on top of the latest scientific thinking around a particular disease area.
Here's a concern, though, when it comes to the university hospitals of, you know, like UCLA versus Cedars. Don't you only get to see residents? And they're students, aren't they?
Well, that's the truth, Jillian. So one part of what you said is true. Residents are, in fact, physicians in training.
Okay.
And while you want to make sure let me say a second thing. Residents also are always supervised by an attending physician.
Oh.
A resident cannot treat you without the supervision of someone above them. But this is also what I do, and I encourage patients to do this as well.
Okay.
Depending on my personal situation, I may or may not be comfortable with being treated by a physician in training. And if I'm not comfortable, I simply tell the hospital staff that I prefer to see the attending. I don't want my care to be managed by a resident. And 9 times out of 10, I get what I want.
Really?
Really.
You know, so I love that because the bigger theme to that is that you have to ask for what you need.
Absolutely.
So many people are afraid to ask for what they need, and it's very intimidating, which is another question I have about this. That's a very, you know, those university hospitals are big and intimidating and impersonal. So is there a way to make it any less scary for someone? Is there, you know, is it that simple to ask for an attending physician?
Yes, it can be that simple. But here's one other thing that I find helpful in university hospitals. It's not unusual for them to have a concierge department or a patient services department. And if you find yourself in a situation where you feel like the whole environment is too complex for you, ask them to send someone in who is the hospital's patient advocate. That person can make you comfortable and give you an opportunity to ask the questions that you need to have asked without necessarily feeling intimidated. They can be very helpful.
I've never even heard of that. Janice, have you heard of that?
Well, no, what blows my mind is how much rights we do have to ask these to get this information. That kind of...
Who would know that?
Exactly.
A patient services? A concierge at the hospital?
Yeah.
I've never even heard of that. Yeah. I wouldn't even know that was available to me.
Well, and the other thing I try to remember for myself and my family, I try to encourage others to remember, is that the medical system is there to serve us.
Yeah,
right? The system is supposed to serve us. And there are institutions and physicians who are great at it, and there are physicians and institutions who are bad at it.
Right.
So, Jillian, your point about asking for what you need, I just can't overstate how very important that is.
Okay. So, number three, you say, I have my little prescriptions here. Losing your temper is a losing proposition. Explain what you, because I've been known to occasionally lose my temper.
So, really?
Not often. No, very rarely. But I was wondering if you could elaborate.
So, Jillian, I have one of my best friends recently had a difficult situation to manage with her husband. And as the caregiver, of course, we all bear huge responsibility when someone in our family is ill. And he had been in the hospital for a while. She felt like she wasn't getting the right kind of response, wasn't getting the right kind of attention that she felt her husband needed. And at a point when she just couldn't take it anymore, she lost her temper,
yeah.
Called court in the hall, pointed her fingers, shouted at everybody, really stomped her feet, and she kind of left that situation going, well, boy, I really told them. I really gave them a piece of my mind.
Right.
Well, lo and behold, guess who is the least favorite patient on the floor now?
Right.
Her husband. So in trying to effect a change and get someone's attention, she did the exact opposite. She alienated herself, alienated her husband, and really gave herself the reputation and her husband the reputation of being the problem patient. Now, that's not to say that we all don't get upset. You know, when you have a serious health issue to deal with, it's very, very upsetting. But I have never seen a situation get better because someone loses it in the hallway, runs up and down the hall screaming and yelling, trying to get what they need. I really do suggest that in tough situations, you take a deep breath, you get calm,
right.
You identify the person who has the authority to listen to you and affect a change. You calmly and deliberately walk down your list, and I'll always write things down because when I'm upset, I can't remember all the things I need to say, and then you get upset when someone's walked away and you haven't finished your list. I calmly can go through my list, and then, Jillian, if I don't get someone who is saying, I hear you, I am listening, I will follow up, and I will get back to you. If that's not the response I'm getting, I'll ask for the next level of supervisor to have a conversation with. But it's always in a calm, respectful, clear, and direct fashion.
Yeah, I love that because you don't tend to think of things that way, or at least, you know, when I talk to my shrink about what happens when I lose my temper, you know, he's like, you get rewarded in your head when you think you freak out. It's like that scene with Shirley MacLaine in Terms of Endearment when she loses it and she's like, give my daughter the shot.
Yeah.
I don't know if you remember that scene, but I think in our minds we get to that point where we think if we yell really loud, if we're really scary, if we're really intimidating, you know, the squeaky wheel. But it's so interesting when you say that you end up creating the very thing that you're most afraid of. They avoid you.
Exactly.
They don't want to go anywhere near you. You alienate yourself. You alienate the person that you're trying to help. And I love that you say to write everything down because I can't think of how many times I've gotten flustered or frustrated and, you know, not written it down. It's like, oh, God, I forgot to ask about X, Y, and Z, and I'm never going to get that person back on the phone. And it allows you to collect your thoughts, calm down, get centered, and focused.
Exactly.
And you have a game plan. I love that.
And in doing so, Jillian, I think about it like judo and karate. You know, when you do it that way, you keep your power. You know,
right.
when you've completely lost it, and you know you're crying, they're afraid, and you know everyone's looking at you like, oh gosh, there's a crazy lady. You lose so much power that you can't affect the kind of change that you need to for your loved one.
Right. You're absolutely right. This is a lesson not just for the hospital people. I want to make clear. This is a lesson for your life as well. It really is. It's about controlling your emotions. And it's just before we were talking to you, I was talking about a book that I'd written, and in the book it talks about managing your emotions, and I look back at my life and think about how I have wiped out months of work in a moment of impulsivity with emotions that were out of control. Mm-hmm. And this is such an important lesson in this type of environment and in every environment. You could not be, and that's obviously why you were such an incredibly successful businesswoman as well. Okay, I'm sorry. I digress.
But you know, but just what, you know, yeah. I was just going to say that Myrtle also makes a great point, in then it becomes about you.
Yeah.
If you are the advocate for the person, it all the attention is on me and my emotional breakdown, and all of a sudden it's not about this person I'm trying to take care of anymore. It's
right.
About me. And I get it.
You've been through hell and back with everything, you taking care of your mom and you.
Yeah, when
really...
you navigate for the elderly, it's. I really appreciate what you're saying, and you get scared to say something. On the other side of the coin, you get scared to say something because if I say something, they're not going to treat my dad. They're not going to treat my dad good. They're going to do something. They're going to not let him eat. They're not going to. So there's that balance, because you can go on the other side where you say nothing because you're so afraid they're not going to care for them.
Yes, so I'm glad you raised that. I'm glad you raised that, Janice, because I think so much can be done when you're trying to talk to somebody about a concern that you have by simply starting with a really clear premise. And the premise is really simple, and it comes through in the statement of, "Hi, thank you so much for caring for my father. Mm. I know you've been working very hard, and we can see the progress. I have some concerns, though, that I'd like to share with you, and I'm wondering if you would be willing to help me." Acknowledge that they're working. You acknowledge that everybody's doing the best they can. You acknowledge that you have a point of view that you're concerned about, and you're asking for their help. I have never seen anyone say, "No, no, no, I'm not going to help you."
Yeah, true.
If they say, "Well, I'm not the person to help you," you say, "Okay, that's fine. Can you please tell me who the person is? Can you give me a name? Can you refer me?" "Terrific. I thank you for your help." You start from the premise that no one is intending to do any harm.
Ooh.
And it
takes
down
the defenses. That's powerful right there. That is so powerful, because I think so many of us are so suspicious and we're so jaded, and it's like, this system is corrupt and you don't care about me. And I don't want to create sweeping generalizations, but I know in my heart I question the motives of everyone, and I definitely bring that to the table. I love this, because that's exactly right. You're right. You come to the table with a clean slate. You leave your baggage at the door.
Absolutely. Because believe me, Jillian, at least this is my opinion, the medical profession right now is so difficult. It's difficult for patients, but it's equally difficult for those who are giving care, doctors and nurses and EMTs and respiratory therapists. These people have really, really tough jobs. So my experience has been that I've not seen anybody in the profession who did not come to the profession with a genuine desire to help other people. But our system right now sure is making it tough on everybody.
So in saying that, your next tip is that doctors are only human. What does that mean? That scares me, Myrtle, by the way. I want to be clear. I like to think of them as
gone.
Magicians.
Exactly.
Yes, they're
Isn't
supposed
that
to be.
The truth?
Yes, I like to think of them as, like, you know, magicians. They wave their wand and you're cured.
Absolutely. Well, and I like to think of physicians as having being in the best place every single day to focus on me and my needs. And this point came home to me really hard one day. When I went to my physician's office, I waited in the waiting room, and, you know, he's late. He was 15, 20 minutes late. And I started, you know, the self-talk in my head with, "My goodness, doesn't he respect my time?" And on and on and on and on and on. By the time I got into his office, I looked at him, Jillian. I could tell something was terribly wrong. He just didn't look like himself.
Right.
Well, I took a minute to ask him how he was that day. and how was his family? And he shared with me that an hour earlier he'd found out that his father had passed away.
There
was a moment where I wasn't focusing on my job, and that was to be the best patient I could be. Instead, I was spending my time all wrapped up in whether or not my doctor was performing for me.
Right.
And so I just try to remind people that doctors have kids, doctors have problem kids, doctors have trouble marriages, they have parents that pass away,
right.
They have all the kinds of burdens that you and I hold every day. But the best thing that we can do when we go in to see our doctor is to make sure we are the best patient we can be. And by being the best patient, I like to really encourage people to always have your family medical history in your hands.
Janice is freaking out. She's like, that's so important.
No, it's
and
so
I'm like,
true.
Why is it so important? Why?
It's important because one of the biggest predictors of what kind of health you will have really is the health of your parents, your grandparents, your cousins, your uncles, your aunts. Your history in your family, whether it's the prevalence of disease, whether it's that your father lived until he was 100 or he lived until he was 65, whether or not your family has a history of cancer, all of this information, there's such important clues for a physician to be able to look at to really not only start looking for things in you, but more importantly, to help coach you on lifestyle things around how you eat, how you exercise, whether or not you smoke or not. That kind of coaching is really important to help make sure that you have the best possible outcome regardless of your history.
Okay.
So that medical history is really important. I also believe that it is essential that everywhere you go, you have tucked in your wallet the list of medications that you're taking.
Really? Of course. Oh, God, I never even think of this.
People carry around their driver's license, supposedly because if you get into an accident, you want someone to know who you are.
Yeah.
Even more important than who you are is what medication are you taking?
Oh, my gosh.
Because if you're in the back of an emergency vehicle, whether it's a police car or an ambulance,
yeah,
they can't even begin to treat you without running some risk unless they know the medications you're taking, why you're taking them, the strength, the dose, and the frequency. Really, really important.
What a great piece of information. Why does no one tell you these things? I can't believe I've never heard this before. This is not common knowledge.
Because you're healthy, though. You're healthy, so you probably haven't had to navigate it that much.
Yeah, but what if I was in a car accident 5 minutes from now? Well, I'm not getting in the car in 5 minutes, but today, I mean, what if I was? Accidents happen all the time. I just can't understand why I haven't heard this before. It's frustrating to me.
Well, but I mean, you know, it's important because whenever you go to your doctor's office and they ask you to fill out the form.
Yeah, okay.
Five questions in are what medications are you on? How long have you been taking them?
Even the vitamins. They even want to know the vitamins that I take.
That's exactly right because they can interact with other medications as well. So the last thing that I really think is important in terms of doing your part as a patient is be really clear about your symptoms when you're going in to see a doctor. You know, if you've had flu symptoms for 3 days, that's a very different picture than if you've had flu symptoms for a month.
Okay.
Right?
Okay.
So not only knowing what your symptoms are, how long you've had them, what have you done to relieve them or to make them better that have or have not worked, giving that little story about what you're coming in for and being as precise as possible is really helpful, even if it means, once again, that you're writing notes down and you're taking your notes in with you.
Gotcha. Okay. And prescription number 5, practice routine maintenance? What do you mean?
Yes. I think one of the most disruptive things that can happen to a family is to find a family member who's turned suddenly ill.
Okay.
And it's not unusual for all the attention to be placed on making the ill person better, that the little things that are happening in your life that keep you feeling like your life isn't spinning out of control, those are the things that go by the wayside. So, for example, if as a family you always had Sunday dinner where all the kids came over, if there is any way to still have that Sunday dinner, it's so important, especially when there are children involved. You know, my father was recently hospitalized because he has a heart condition and also has kidney problems. He's 84 years old, aging, and seeing some of the things that wouldn't be all that surprising. But one of the things that was very important to him was to continue to have his four newspapers a day to read. The man reads four newspapers a day, and I'll be doggone. We might not have been able to find his preferred papers, but every day we got him four newspapers. It was just a little thing that helped him feel like everything in his life wasn't just spinning out of control.
Right. I can see how incredibly important that is. We are such creatures of habit, and even just having that little piece of your routine when you're not sick, when you're just feeling overwhelmed, or when you're going through a divorce, or
absolutely,
you're going through a life change, being able to have that little bit of normalcy allows you to feel grounded, like you don't totally, you know, not recognize yourself or your life. These are, Myrtle, everything you're saying, it's fascinating to me because, you know, I listen to Susie Orman talk about money, and when she talks about money, you can apply all those things to your life.
Yeah.
When I talk about fitness, you can apply all those things to your life. And as you're talking about healthcare, these are major life lessons. This applies to every area of your life, as well as, of course, this specific issue, which is so scary for so many people.
Yes.
It really is. And what is so special to me about what you're doing is that you've left the most lucrative career to pursue this because it's your passion to help people and to share this information with the world. So I need to tell people right now, because Janice was like, how can we find her? She just literally wrote on a piece of paper, does she have a site the audience can go to?
Well, that's such great information.
How do people get in touch with you? How do they get more from you? Obviously, I'm going to have you on every month, and I would love is for us to be able to take questions. So everybody out there listening who wants to ask Myrtle a question, get it ready. I'm going to take it off of Facebook, so you'll be able to ask her directly and let her know what's going on with you. But, you know, for the few people that get to do that, how does everyone else get in touch with you?
So my new company that I've started was established for one purpose, Jillian, and that's to help consumers navigate the healthcare system. I have a really small site that's been established, and the address for that site is www.myrtlepotter.com.
And that's MYRTLEPOTTER.com.
.com, yes. And what consumers can expect is that over the next couple of months that site will grow in terms of its presence. In addition, consumers will also be able to see me in their doctor's offices on a closed network television system starting in July.
What?
Where, as you're sitting in the doctor's office waiting to be seen, if your physician subscribes to Accent Health Television, you will see me and my tips being shown right there in the physician's offices. And it'll reference you back to my website as well as the website of Everyday Health.
Wow. Myrtle, thank you so, so much. This has truly been an enlightening segment. I can't even tell you. I'm so excited to be learning more from you and to be working with you.
Well, I thank you, Jillian. I admire you so much, and I in particular, I admire your commitment to helping people live bigger, fuller and healthier lives. And I ask and invite the listeners to also follow me.
Yes.
On Twitter. My Twitter name is Myrtle Potter.
Why am I not following you on Twitter?
I'm going to follow you, Jillian.
I didn't know you were on Twitter. I'm following you on Twitter. I'm right now, I'm on my phone.
Following Myrtle.
I'm like this. I'm furious that I didn't know. Okay, but what about Facebook? No Facebook yet? Just Twitter?
Oh, I'm on Facebook, and you'll find me on Facebook, Myrtle Potter, the Trusted Voice in Healthcare.
Got it.
If you just even look up the Trusted Voice in Healthcare, you'll find me on Facebook.
Fabulous. Thank you so much, buddy. I can't wait to have you back.
Oh, thank you so much, Jillian. I'm so proud to be with you, and I thank you for giving me the opportunity to share a little bit of knowledge that may help some people.
Kidding me? We thank you for being on, and I would go follow you right now. Have a great day, buddy.
Okay, thank you. Bye-bye.
Okay, we got time for one call, and Charlene is waiting on the line. Hey, Charlene.